And welcome in to the Friday edition. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar. Joe Rex Road will be along shortly here on the program here today. Ian Safar live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Ian, how are we doing? What's going on?
Good morning, Robert. How was your night at Bridgestone? How about
it? You know, it was a little bit quicker than it was on Tuesday night. You know, I actually had to do a little bit more extra work last night and stayed around later than I thought because Stamkos scored four, and we're going to get all over that here in just a few minutes. But still much better, much quicker exit than on Tuesday night when the game started basically at 9 o'clock. So,
okay.
Good stuff.
Yeah, good.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I got busy doing family stuff and missed the first period. Saw they were up 2-0, double Stamkos, so that was cool. But pretty much kept my eye on the other rest of the game there. But didn't watch too much of the football though. So
no, elite uniform matchup, elite.
Elite, yeah. The creamsicles were out for Tampa. Kyle Pitts was, I guess, having a career day. Apparently,
I guess so.
Tampa blew it. Todd Bowles went off in the post game.
If you guys didn't see the Todd Bowles post game, oh my goodness.
Yeah,
I mean, we can't play
up.
Any of it because we'd have to bleep the entire thing. And I mean, almost literally the entire thing. But yeah, pretty good stuff. Todd Bowles was very upset after the loss last night to the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, how about Joe and Bryce? You know, Bryce Young is Carolina Panthers right there.
I know it. They're right there with a chance to sneak back in there, win that division, and maybe get into the playoffs. So we'll see what happens on that front. We do have a lot to get to on the program today. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will be with us at 7:30. We'll get into a magical night for Steven Stamkos and the Preds for him last night. Teron Davenport will be with us at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as they go for win number 2 in a row, taking on the San Francisco 49ers this weekend. They've not had back-to-back wins since 2022. So we'll see if the Titans can accomplish that. But Joe Rexroad, first off, welcome into the program. Secondly, we begin on the Nashville Predators. Steven Stamkos, 4 goals last night. A magical performance for a legendary player. He is now 6 goals away from 600 in his NHL career. He will be the 22nd player in the history of the league to accomplish that number when that time comes. But 4 goals last night for Stamkos. It was the second time in his career that he's reached the 4-goal mark. He had 2 in the first. He had 2 in the second. I was wondering if, the double hat trick was going to be on the table for Stamkos last night. But I guess he just has to settle for 4. Joe, pretty magical stuff from number 91 for the Predators last night.
Yeah, I mean, break up the Preds, break up Steven Stamkos. I mean, good for him because it wasn't that long ago. He did not seem to be having a good time, with this season, with this team, with his own performance. And all of a sudden, I mean, we talked to Andrew Brunette yesterday. He sounds like the happiest guy in the world. You know, the Preds are just absolutely unstoppable. Luke Evangelista, has 23 points now. I mean, just everything is working. And Stamkos, people have been saying it, though. You've been saying it. It's like, he's still, he's still Steven Stamkos, you know. Get him opportunities, and he'll bury some opportunities. And all of a sudden, they've figured out ways to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool. And look, not the entire story, so I don't want to go crazy here. Not the entire story of the season. But, you know, they showed this on the FanDuel broadcast last night. Sometimes this is the way it goes in hockey, right? You know, sometimes, Joe, the expected goals that you're going to generate and the actual goals that go on the board, which are the only thing that matters, don't quite add up. Yep. And there was a stretch earlier in the year where the Predators probably deserved a little bit better of a fate than they were getting. And no one wants to hear that, and I understand that when it's going on at the time. But it is overcorrecting pretty dramatically right now, right? Like the goals are going in, the bounces are going their way, as they say. Hey, look, Stamkos last night, I mean, he's doing all the right things. And O'Reilly talked about that after the game. He's getting to the front of the net. He's getting to the areas where you score goals. He had a couple of fortunate bounces last night. Like, his third goal where he got the hat trick was basically like a passing attempt that went in off Justin Falk, right? And the fourth goal, Josi shot it. Matthew Wood redirected it, and it went right on the tape of Stamkos on the backhand. So those are two pretty fortunate bounces that he got last night. But you know what, Joe? You start to get those fortunate bounces when you're playing really well. I mean, the dude had 9 shots on goal last night. He's been playing really well the last few weeks here. And, you know, we talked about the switch to his line with O'Reilly and Evangelista. And last night, that wasn't even really part of it because they're going 11 forward, 7 defensemen. And he got out there a couple times with, like, Fedor Svechkov and Matt Wood. And all of a sudden, they started scoring. And Brunette was like, well, yeah, just go play with them. Go play with Svechkov and Wood. So it was pretty cool. And look, you know, I said this last night on Twitter. I talked to Roman Josi a little bit about this after the game. Everybody understands that the win-loss record has not gone according to plan so far since Steven Stamkos has come in. But last night, like, if you're a Predators fan, particularly if you're a Predators fan that's been around for a while and has, you know, seen the ups and downs of the franchise, and you've seen, you know, not very many Hall of Fame level players come through here. Last night's pretty cool, man. Like, a guy that is undoubtedly going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's won 2 Stanley Cups. I don't know how many goals he's going to end up with in, you know, when his career's all said and done, but he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be in the top 20 in the history of the National Hockey League in goal scoring. To see him have a night like that in your jersey, I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. I mean, that's Steven Stamkos. And, it's kind of like all we're talking about is winning in this town here lately. So
a lot of winning going on.
You know, whatever it may mean, I know that there's probably some apprehension from Preds fans on, like, okay, let's not, like, get too caught up in, you know, a little surge or whatever. But, I mean, gosh, just like with the Titans, it's like, let the guys have a little enjoyment out of this too, you know. Again, like Stamkos, I mean, yeah, just some of the, you know, a couple of the pressers, some of the interviews that you've had with him this year, you're just like, geez, man, this guy's down bad. You know?
Yeah.
So hopefully he's feeling good and feeling like himself again. He obviously looks like himself out there.
Well, I don't want to go too crazy here because what I'm about to say, you can immediately then look around and say, well, Robbie, that's great. You can also look back the other way in the standings and realize that they're only 3 points from the bottom of the NHL. So, again, I recognize that, and I'm not going crazy here. But I will say, like, that's part of the season being where we're at right now in December, the condensed schedule, and nobody other than Colorado and Dallas have really been able to run away with anything. Like, Colorado and Dallas are just freakish with what they're doing. But the Predators, after the win last night, are 5 points out of a playoff spot. They're 5 points out of the last wild card spot in the Western Conference. Now, again, they're 3 points out of the basement of the NHL. So take that for however you want to take it. But they've won 6 out of their last 8. We talked about it yesterday. They're playing better. Like, they're playing better hockey than they've played throughout the course of the season. So, I'm not going to sit here and act like I believe that the Predators are about to go on some playoff push here or anything, but there's no doubt about it that they have found something over the last couple of weeks, and they're playing a lot better. Now, they're getting ready to have to go play at Colorado tomorrow, and I understand they just beat Colorado earlier this week. I watched Colorado play a little bit last night after the game because it was on the TV in front of me, and they just absolutely smoked Florida 6-2. I mean, that team at home is a much different thing. So they very well, Joe, could go out there tomorrow and just get absolutely killed by Colorado, because everybody is when they go on the road there. But they found something here, and they're playing pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I think Andrew Brunette deserves credit. I mean, it was almost a foregone conclusion he was going to be gone. And, they've stuck it out. He stuck it out. they've found some stuff, they've made some adjustments that have worked, you know, and everybody's being a professional and pushing forward. And I mean, if you're in that room, you know, I mean, you tweeted vibes are high, and I said, uh-oh, Robbie invoked the word vibes.
I did.
So, you know, you got to be feeling good and like, hey, screw all this talk of all the stuff, the firing and the selling off and the rebuild and all that stuff, you know. Let's go win hockey games. You know, whatever everybody else thinks we are, be darned. So we'll see if they can keep it going. I mean,
well, again,
it's an 82-game season, man. There's going to be ups and downs.
Long season, ups and downs. But I do hope that, you know, when the time comes this year, and I, you know, hopefully he's still in a Predators uniform by the time he does it, and then, you know, after that, we'll see what happens. But 600 goals for Stamkos is going to happen here at some point. I mean, we're getting pretty close to a couple of, you know, big milestones in different ways. Like Roman Josi closing in on 1,000 games. He's at 980, so he's got 20 more games left till he hits that mark. But, you know, even more than the 1,000-game mark, 600 goals is coming up for Stamkos. And you're talking about, you know, among the thousands and thousands of players that have played in the National Hockey League over the years, he is going to be the 22nd guy to reach that number. Like, I just hope, like, you can kind of appreciate that. Like, it's pretty crazy the amount of goals he scored. And that 600 number is pretty darn special in this league.
Yeah, that's some serious perspective right there. That is absolutely big time, no doubt.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Alex Doherty will be with us later in the show. We will get back into the Predators with him, but a magical night for Steven Stamkos last night, and the Predators win 7-2 against the St. Louis Blues. We will switch gears, get into some college football coming up next. You know, after a pretty special week this week from a program we've talked about, which we will get into, by the way, a little bit later in the show, who is the most hated college football program out there? It's a very fascinating question that Rex Road's throwing out there. I want to get your thoughts. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. It's bowl season in the Game Nashville Sports Network, your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Tomorrow, catch the Celebration Bowl on 102.5 The Game as SC State takes on Prairie View at 11 a.m. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowlgames. You'll get a full scouting report coming up on Monday from Prairie View and what they do from Rex Road. I'll be watching the Titans game. I'll be watching Phillip Rivers play against the Seattle Seahawks. And Joe's going to be watching and spending time on Prairie View this weekend. So looking forward to that coming up on Monday.
Hey, man. All football is good football.
That's true. Except in some cases, the Tennessee Titans. But we'll see if they can avoid that this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, you only get 17 of those, too. So
that's
I
true.
Mean, you're going to savor them, man. Just that like Gursky said.
So it's been a heck of a week for Notre Dame, Joe. And we're going to get into something else on the Notre Dame front a little bit later in the show, which I have wondered if this was going to happen, and it's going to be very, very interesting to monitor moving forward. We'll get into that a little bit later in the program. But look, yeah, we all know this. Like, Notre Dame is one of those teams where if you're a Notre Dame fan, and there are a whole lot of them, very passionate about your program, and if you're not a Notre Dame fan, Notre Dame is probably on the list of teams that you really don't like and do not want to see good things happen for. Frankly, like, for me, Ohio State, one of those teams, like Ohio State on the list of, boy, do they have a lot of fans, and boy, if you're not one of those fans, probably not overly fond of the Ohio State football program. So, Joe, you've thrown this idea out there. Who's the most hated college football program right now, and why?
Now, obviously, that's going to always be tied to success. Right. So, like, for example, I would argue that, yeah, I guess it was quite a while ago now, but to me, it doesn't seem that long ago. Like, USC would have been one of those teams. Now, maybe not for everybody. I mean, Pete Carroll was kind of a fun, likable guy when they were on top, and you had like awesome players like Reggie Bush. But that's
Young Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, there you go. But like, there's an example of a program that people probably don't even think about anymore. Right. And the thing about this question is, yeah, if you are like if you're a Vanderbilt fan answering this question, you're going to answer Tennessee, but you know, or whatever, Michigan, Ohio State, or whatever, Michigan State, Michigan, you know, and so on and so forth. If you're an Oklahoma State fan, it's Oklahoma, you know. But I'm saying if you can step back and just say, apart from your own personal, whatever the personal situation is, who do you just really hate? You know, nationally. I do think that Notre Dame has a shot, which is why I thought about this. Again, that with them, I do think Marcus Freeman also is like the most likable. I mean, think about like their coaches they've had, you know, Charlie Weiss, Brian Kelly, Lou yep. Holtz. I mean, they've had just to go with just being Notre Dame and just all the people are sick of all the, you know, fawning over Notre Dame and their own TV deal. Then you have coaches like that on top of it, you know, to make them even less likable. But I think they have a shot at it. I think Alabama under Saban
yeah.
would have been a really – and maybe that's still – I mean, it's still Alabama. It's not like they've completely fallen off the face of the earth. They're about to be in the playoff here this year. But then what about Georgia? Like, have they moved into a strong position with people now? I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that at least they're definitely getting there if they're not there already. I mean, Saban's Alabama teams are a good one. And to your point on all this, I mean, I think winning is tied to this. I mean, how many, you know, I'm sure that if Notre Dame went 6-6 for 12 years in a row, that there'd still be a lot of people that hated Notre Dame. But it wouldn't be the same, right? Like, you know, winning is a part of it. So that's, you know, Alabama is a really good example. With Saban always being in the picture for competing for a national championship, that's part of it. You know, I do think what's a little bit different about the Notre Dame part of this, which is why I think they've got a good shot to be the team here. You know, when you're an independent and you do things your own way and you've got your own TV deal and I don't know, the perception sometimes I think with them is they think they're better than everybody else. And I don't think that helps in this discussion.
Yes, no, for sure. Yeah, there's that. Yeah, and like there's well, you bring that up, and it's like Michigan. Obviously, you have as we talked about, they've got this scandal after scandal. Like, you know, they're as scandalous as anybody. And then there's also, I mean, I don't know how much pushing there is still of like we're different. You know, I mean, I don't know how many people really bought that anyway. But I mean, certainly, you know, they would have to be on this. I'll tell you, growing up, who. Two programs that, to me, I rooted against every single week, no questions asked. Florida with Steve Spurrier. I mean, I hated them.
Yeah.
Just no reason, no affiliation. I rooted for Tennessee against them. I rooted for Bobby Bowden and Florida State against them. And then Miami, you know, the U.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, they were very polarizing, so it was either like you loved them or you hated them. I mean, I hated both those teams, and for whatever reason, I liked Florida State, which probably was just like a Bobby Bowden thing. Now I don't know if everybody felt that way. Some people didn't like Florida State either, you know. But I like Florida for sure. I think, and so it's coach personality, you know. If you got a guy, which now I love the guy, you know, that's what's funny. It's like, man, that guy was amazing, hilarious. Let's go through all his little UT Citrus Bowl jokes, you know, or Auburn, the library and the coloring books got burned down or whatever he said, you know. But at the time, you didn't like him. I don't know. Is there anybody like that now? There's just I don't think we have the same personalities.
I mean, somebody's already voted for Lane Kiffin's LSU. That one's got a chance.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, that will be – and Brian Kelly's LSU was – strong, right? And you know, they steal him away from Notre Dame, and oh, here comes the championships, and oh my God, what is he doing in that video? Is he like, is that like some disco move he learned in 1978, you know, and all that stuff, and then the family, but Lane could, well, especially if they win big.
Oh yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. No. When they got a chance to be the Kings.
When Notre Dame had Brian Kelly, that was just a double whammy.
That's double whammy. There's no doubt.
You know, that made it even worse. Like, you're like, okay, I don't really dislike Notre Dame, but if you have Brian Kelly in there, it is a double, you know. No, thank you.
See, it's interesting on the Notre Dame thing because I do think it's it's regional, like in the Midwest. So you mentioned that, you know, when they're good, of course, it's different. But the Bob Davey, Ty Willingham, Charlie Weiss, they went through a long stretch after Lou Holtz of really not being good, but they still would be like preseason top 10. They still would have top 10 classes. And so I, at least, you know, where I was in the Midwest, I think the hatred it still was very strong for them just because, and it was kind of the same thing with Michigan and them. They were always overhyped and then they were not good. It was always, there was always the September Heisman. Somebody from one of those schools is going to win the Heisman. This, oh my God, Brady Quinn's amazing, you know? And then they end up going 8-4, 7-5, you know? So, but of course you're more hateable when you win way more than that.
Let's head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Chad in Hendersonville to the program. Chad, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, I appreciate this conversation. You know, I try to teach my kids not to use the word hate because, you know, politicians these days, they sell hate. Country music stars sometimes can sell hate. And, of course, we wake up in the morning, a lot of us hate our jobs. So it's easy to just, you know, hate this, I hate this, I hate everything. I think Alan Jackson had a song about it. But I will use the word dislike, and I think if you're in the northern side of the universe here, I think Michigan comes up just because of cheating. You know, to me, it's not winning or losing the reason that you dislike a team. It's just it's other factors. If you win and you do it the right way, and you're hating on them, then that says more about you. But at the end of the day, you look at the Michigan with some of the cheating stuff. That's a turnoff. In the South, I think it's Georgia just because of the likability or the lack of likability of Kirby Smart. And, you know, if you're doing things the right way, I mean, I wasn't ever big, you know, I didn't grow up in Alabama and they would probably be a rival for what I liked. But I respected the way that Saban went around his business and I couldn't dislike or use your word on that. But anyways, just the way you go about your business and the way that you approach yourself, to me, is more about likability. Your thoughts?
Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it. I mean, Kirby's visor, I think that elevates it too. When you got that visor on and that, you know, his little hairs floating over the top of it, that adds to it.
No doubt. Well, same thing with Lane, right? I mean, Spurrier, the visor can make someone more hateable. You know, Chad making me feel bad about using the word hate, but I mean, you know. I man, I don't know. I'm having to do the haters guide to the playoff now, okay. So it hates on my brain. But yeah, like, you know, hate with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I mean,
not like know, not like hatred. Hate. Yeah, like hate and hatred. Those are two different words, right?
They are, well, yes, they are.
Thank you.
We have established that on the program today. Let's quickly welcome in Doug to the program. Doug, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey guys, hey, this is a little off topic, but the Falcons did the same thing last night that the Browns did. They're down 14, they score a touchdown, and they go for two instead of kicking the extra point, and then they miss it, and then they have to go for two. And so when did this strategy start?
It's a great question, Doug. Thank you for the call. Joe, I feel like it's a very recent thing. Like over the last 5 years, people have started to do that more.
Yeah, I'd say so. I was going to say maybe 5 to 7. Probably not, though. It's probably more like the last 5 years, right?
I think it's like, yeah, it's pretty recent.
Yeah, and again, it's just like, you know, again, if you do the math on probabilities of how often you will make a two, then basically the theory is you're going to get one of them. So go ahead and do it. And then if you get the first one, like you're down two touchdowns, you get the first one. The next touchdown, you can just kick the extra point to win instead of tie.
Right.
Personally, I'm never doing this as a coach. Like, I'm just going. I mean, unless I have a crappy kicker, right?
Right.
I'm just not doing it. I'm just going to take what I call free point. I do think in college, the NFL, it's a little different because in college football, it's still it's still 2 yards away, and so you just pop the ball up in the air and you get the free point. The NFL, you do have to make. You know, a short field goal, but it's a little more strange. You see, obviously, way more missed extra points in the NFL, right, than we used to see. So there's also that is also part of it. But yeah, it's not my favorite.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts on the most hated college football teams in the United States of America. We will get back into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts, Rex Road's throwing it out there. The most hated college football teams or programs in America. Who qualifies right now? And again, like, don't be saying, well, I'm a Tennessee fan, so it's got to be Alabama, or I'm a Vanderbilt fan, it's got to be Tennessee. Like, just in general, the most hated college football programs in America right now. Now, Joe, we do have one vote for Tennessee, and I feel like the explanation given here is a valid one, and I want to get your thoughts. One texter says, I feel like Tennessee's got to be on this list of most hated, mostly because of how loud and obnoxious their fan base can be. Joe, Vol Twitter, maybe elevating Tennessee up the list a little bit.
Well, I think, I'm glad that that was brought up, because I think Tennessee certainly has potential. We've talked about this. Like, if Tennessee gets, like, good, you know, then,
it could be bad.
Yes, and it is interesting, too, because before social media, how did people have perceptions of fan bases? I mean, basically, if you went to a game there, if you were at a bowl site with that fan base or something, or, you know, I mean,
AOL chat. Yeah.
Yeah. Go to their message boards, and they're really mean on their message boards. I don't know. But the phenomenon of social media, I think, has sort of develop some reputations for fan bases.
I think they were all annoying. You just had to live there.
Well, it could be that. There is something to that.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, in the last day, it's totally my fault, but, like, I absolutely hate Michigan State fans right now. They make me sick and want to vomit. And I'm just in this, like, total war with Michigan State fans, just like the old days, you know, when I used to work at the Detroit Free Press, and they were convinced that, like, it's all a conspiracy against Michigan State and for Michigan. It's the blue wall. And it's like, I mean, these people, man, you want to get it. And Michigan fans too. I hate them too. I hate Michigan State fans, and I hate Michigan fans. I hate you all. Okay. I equally hate you all. Okay. I want you to know. But now the social media aspect of this can really feed perception. And I think the Tennessee fan base, it always felt to me, Robbie, like just all those years of suffering and just, yeah, and being, you know, oh, Butch is going to be the guy. Oh, Pruitt. And, oh, Fulmer's back. Whatever. Like, you get teased by all these things. And it's like this like anger, you know. But if they got good, yeah, man, the Vol Twitter would, I think, would rise to the top of a lot of people's lists around this country.
I'll throw one at you that I think some people maybe didn't have that strong of opinion on. But if you really didn't like this coach, I think there was a stretch not too long ago where they were on the list. You know, people have strong opinions about Dabo, right? Like, Dabo, I think, is generally a nice guy, but he says some really goofy stuff sometimes. They did a whole lot of winning, and there was a whole lot of, you know, bring your guts in the post-game interviews on you know, all these ESPN games and college football playoff games after the game. I've gotten a couple of personal texts about, yeah, Dabo and Clemson were definitely on that list at one point. Maybe not now. But
you could probably add me to that group at some
point. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it is, too, I almost feel like with Dabo, he's somewhat, at times, maybe even more insufferable in the bad times here, you know?
I know.
I mean, like, some of his pressers now are like, what? But, yeah, obviously, when you're winning and you're doing that goofy stuff. Well, listen, if South Carolina, I know that you have an unhealthy dislike for him.
You ain't got to worry about that.
What if South Carolina, like, actually would have lived up to what they were supposed to be this year? I think a lot of people around the country would have been like, who is this? What is this? TikTok. Oh, my God. Like, how insufferable would Shane Beamer have been if they actually would have been what they were supposed to be? Now, losing Shane Beamer, also, it's like, just, again, like a child who just got grounded and is talking back to his parents.
Yeah, it's what he is. Either winning, losing, all of it. It's just what he is at that point. I'm glad the rest of the country's finally catching on. I've been preaching this for years.
But again, they could, like, way more people could have caught on.
That's
this
true.
Year, you know? And that's the thing. You kind of stay under the radar. But that's the thing about Tennessee, too, is, like, I just think, and I understand, like, there's probably going to be a Vanderbilt fan who immediately says, no, you're wrong, I hate him. But how unlikable really can Josh Heupel be, you know?
Can I tell you the all-time ones for me? just in terms of, and I'm, you know, even removing the Tennessee fandom part of it, because it would be one thing if this guy was just at Florida the whole time, but he did move on to Ohio State. It was pretty easy to hate Urban Meyer's teams no matter where he was, right? Like, I know he had Tebow as his quarterback in Florida, and Tebow's a swell guy, but it was pretty easy to hate Urban Meyer's teams both in Florida and Ohio State. Those are among the top of my all-time lists.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, so sometimes you just have a coach who that's how you feel about him, and I agree. Now, I don't think that – maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think people felt like that way about him at Utah necessarily.
No.
He was still kind of the up-and-coming coach. I mean, I remember when he was at Bowling Green, and Bowling Green got game day, and it was like the biggest thing. My brother-in-law, all his Bowling Green buddies – rented a bar like it was the biggest thing ever, and Urban Meyer was the greatest man on earth, you know.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, as soon as someone like that gets to the advantage places like Florida and Ohio State, then it gets very easy to hate him. On the flip side, again, I could be off on this, and I understand that eventually, like, there was a scandal, which is a hilarious scandal now to think about. I mean, but like, I thought that Jim Tressel made Ohio State about as likable as you could be as Ohio State. Maybe some people disagree with me on that. I understand maybe, you know, Michigan fan, other Big Ten fans.
Good turtlenecks.
Well, the sweater vest, man.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice sweater vest. Yeah. Yeah, I just but then again, I don't know. I mean, when you're Ohio State, you're winning that much, and you get this professorial dude on the sideline, maybe just people just are going to automatically hate that too. But, like, you go from him to Urban Meyer. I know within the program it was like going from, well, basically someone that everybody liked to someone that everybody disliked.
Yes.
For whatever that's worth.
Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Thomas to the program. Thomas, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. I do have to go ahead and agree with what you said earlier. It is definitely Ohio State. And the reason why is because Ohio State, even when they're bad, they are still good. And what I mean by that is their conference, if you go back several years, even when their conference was total crap, they still looked really good even when they weren't that great. And what that means is back, if you remember, when they went to back-to-back national championships, and then what happened? They got smoked by Florida and LSU. And, you know, they weren't really tested in their conference because, you know, Michigan was down really bad back then. Penn State was down. If those teams aren't good around them and they've had a lot of inconsistencies the last couple of decades, then you don't really know what to get from Ohio State. And they always bring in great talent. And I have to also say, too, to all the Miami Hurricane fans out there, 2001, that was not pass interference. I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Thank you, Thomas. That is a nice reference there.
Good reference. I disagree totally. It was just the ref took 10 minutes to get the flag out of his belt. So it was like, oh, my God. But it was the right call. But I totally agree. I mean, Ohio State, we've talked about Ohio State before. They are the only recession-proof program in the country, right?
Like, I mean, what the numbers would say.
In my lifetime, they have a down year or two. I remember they had, like, between Earl Bruce and John Cooper, they had, like, a bad year. And then they had, like, a down at the end of Cooper into Tressel, a bad kind of bad year and like a so-so year, but like that's it. All these other Bama, I mean, go through them. USC, obviously Tennessee, Michigan, Notre Dame, like everyone has extended downturns, except Ohio State. They just have found a way to just never fall into that. And even now, we're sitting here. It looked like not too long ago, like, okay, well, they obviously have a substandard coach. You know, the guy is afraid of Michigan. He cowers every time he sees the color maize. And, you know, they're going to have to move on from this. And now here we go. Defending national champ just crushed Michigan and has all this confidence and talking trash to Lou Holtz. And so they just keep rolling on like a machine.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Well, we'll get into more of your thoughts on the most hated college football programs. Plus, speaking of one of those candidates, an issue that could potentially be around the corner for Notre Dame that is very interesting. We will get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Jason Big Joe broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday, prior to the Monday Night Football game. It's the Dolphins and the Steelers in a big one in the AFC on Monday Night Football. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So, Joe, it's been an eventful week for Notre Dame. As we know, we've talked a lot about it. And friend of the program, Dan Wolkin, put this out there yesterday from Yahoo Sports. After learning of Notre Dame's memorandum of understanding that grants the Irish preferential playoff access starting next year, and we've talked about that, athletic directors in other leagues are threatening to freeze Notre Dame out of future schedules, per Dan Wolkin. So, Joe, I've wondered about this, and we've talked about, you know, the idea of, you know, if Notre Dame finished in the top 12 next year, regardless of what kind of the breakdown looks like around them, they're getting in the college football playoff. And some people said, why? Like, why in the world would they be able to get that in the memorandum of understanding? They don't have a conference, as we know, even though they're trying to yell at the ACC over the past week, but they're not in a conference. We know that. So I have thought about this before. Like, I mean, I guess if you're the SEC and if you're one of these teams or the ACC or the Big Ten, like, there is a way you could solve some of this, and that is, hey, we're just not going to schedule them. We're not going to schedule Notre Dame at all, and they're not going to find a way to play any meaningful games out there, Joe. So what do you make of that idea that Wolkin threw out there of apparently it's being discussed from ADs around the country that they could just freeze Notre Dame out of their future schedules?
Yeah, well, the ACC has been handy for Notre Dame, right? Like, obviously they would not join it as a full member. The ACC gladly would have taken them, but they've had a scheduling agreement, so that gives them several games a year, and they kind of have rotated that. They've also, I know, wanted, you know, they wanted it to be more like Clemson. They wanted more of the better games, and they've had some haggling about that. But of course, now you have this, this whole situation with the ACC and Notre Dame. So there's that. Notre Dame, like, really strong words. Pete Bavakwa, a lot of strong words on a lot of things.
Yep.
After they were left out. And it is interesting to think about this. They have some things that are going to be in place, like the service academies are going to happen. Now, USC even, that is one of their longstanding rivalries that they have preserved through everything. They've preserved Stanford too, but even that, the USC series, USC has talked about, separate from this freezing out conversation, but just the rivalry. Next year, Michigan State and Notre Dame play again for the first time in a long time. They are longtime rivals, but Notre Dame walked away from that. They walked away from Michigan. Again, Michigan State fans, hate you all. No, just kidding. I mean, that's family members of mine too, so just some of you online. But
I feel like this has been a little bit of a therapy session for you today.
God, it's just amazing. Why do I get into Twitter fights? I've gone so long without getting into Twitter fights with people. But both of those programs wanted to keep it going with Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's like, nah, we're good. We're going to go to Georgia. We're going to do this ACC thing. So those are two examples of programs that, had that never happened, I think that they would value it and say, now this is tradition. Like, this is, our fans care about this. We're going to keep it. But now it's kind of like, eh. I mean, I know, again, they're playing next year, but the way Notre Dame has gone about its business has kind of alienated a lot of people, on top of just the whole independence thing and now this special treatment that they're going to get that they don't deserve. So I put more stock into this threat than, for example, this idea that everybody in the SEC is going to stop playing good games. I don't buy that, because I don't think TV and Sankey will ultimately let it happen. And also, I think smart coaches in the SEC are going to understand that, like, if the SEC doesn't do anything against non-league schools, like, you can sit there and scream at yourselves how awesome you are, but it's not going to help you.
Well, and remember that they're going to a 9-game schedule in the SEC, which, by the way, right, that came out last night. And
it
part
did.
Of that – that agreement is, like, you got to play a power four non-league team too. So, yeah. I mean, not all those games are going to be good. Like, there are going to be plenty of, you know,
you could go weak with
non-league games that go very weak.
Yeah.
But I think that will, just having that in there will by default create some pretty good matchups.
Everybody needs to play 10. That, right? Everybody needs to play 10 Power 4 schools on your schedule, and then you have two other games. And that's as close as we're going to get to fair scheduling it like across college football. And again, for the millionth time, you can do all that, and two teams in the same league could have a top five schedule strength, and one could have a bottom 150 schedule strength. Like, that's totally possible.
By the way,
stupid expansion.
Ole Miss and LSU, I believe September 19th next year.
Yes, it is.
So keep an eye on that one.
The mustard will be bought up in all through the state of Mississippi. Maybe some golf balls too.
Yep. LSU at the they're at the end of the year for Tennessee. So Tennessee at the end of the season, I think, goes on a stretch of like A&M, LSU, Vanderbilt to close out the year. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, they've got a very challenging schedule, the Vols do. Great home schedule. If you've got tickets for Neyland Stadium next year, got Texas coming in September. It's gonna be fun.
It is.
The UT Junior, which is what some Vandy fans call Tennessee UT Junior, but it's actually Texas.
It's a university before Texas was a state. Let's always keep that in mind.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Always keep that in mind. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. By the way, they put together this graphic last night. Somebody did, where they released the 2026 SEC schedule like all at once, and trying to like sift through that with nine games now a part of it was pretty overwhelming. Like, I was trying to figure it out. By the way, we mentioned Tennessee's close of the year. This is how Vanderbilt closes the year next year. Home against Alabama, on the road at Florida, home against Tennessee. Those are the last three games next year. So, good stuff. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Tennessee Titans in the news yesterday on the head coaching front, people started running with it, and I actually read it, and I was like, okay, what does this really mean? We will get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.